Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Welcome to the OC Bitches.
Welcome to the OC Bitches. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Rachel, it's just you and me today.
I know.
I like it when it's you and me.
I do too. We have a lot to say.
Yeah.
No interruptions. But today we're doing season 2, episode 9, The X Factor. I just automatically think of Lauryn Hill because that's her song.
Yeah.
Not sure if they took that from her. Or not. But anyway, it's a good song. First up, we have an interview with the creators of a play that incorporates this episode into it.
So we have some very special guests today, Rachel. Mm-hmm. And I've been looking forward to this. It was brought to my attention that there was a musical that was done at a club in Brooklyn in New York a few years ago called Oscar at the Crown. And a couple people brought it to my attention. Now, first, I would like to introduce, we have Shira Milikowski, and she's the director of the musical. Hi. And director Mark, how do you say your last name?
Mark Mariello.
And the writer Andrew Barrett Cox. Oh, sorry, the composer. Hi.
Mark wrote the show.
I wrote the show. Andrew wrote the music. And then I also performed in it.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, that's so awesome. Well, first, like, it's so nice to meet you guys.
Yeah.
And I was sent this musical. I watched the Julie number and I was so amazed by this. It was incredible. It was very catchy, aww, I might add. Like, it was stuck in my head all day, the song.
Thank you.
Yes, thank
but what
you.
What a crazy fun concept. Can you tell us what exactly Oscar at the Crown is and how Julie is involved?
or the OC.
The OC, right.
More specifically.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yes. There's nothing we love talking about more, actually.
True.
So thank you for having us.
Yeah.
So Oscar at the Crown is, as you said, it was performed in a nightclub in Brooklyn. It's an immersive nightlife musical about Oscar Wilde and reality television, and specifically about The Real Housewives. And then buried inside of it, as the characters are talking about their obsession with reality television, they start to reveal that the person who predicted all of reality television and in the world of the play, therefore the downfall of civilization, was in fact the character of Julie Cooper.
As she launched Newport Living Magazine, of course, predicting that, of course, the whole world would be fascinated with the glamorous lives of rich people in California, which the world is. We are. So yeah, inside the show, there's this conspiracy theory that essentially says that we had Julie Cooper. She was this proto housewife, incredible character. And then we had the Real Housewives of the OC, or the Real Housewives of Orange County, which was the first one. And so when culturally we went from this like fictional television character, Julie Cooper, to these fictionalized but real people but still television characters, the Real Housewives of OC, that's like, that was the ball that started rolling that led to Twitter and social media and the metaverse and totally losing our like handle on reality and fantasy and who we are and who we're trying to pretend ourselves that we are. It all goes back to Julie.
Well, and I couldn't help but, well, first of all, if it's actually Julie, let's actually call Julie is really Josh Schwartz, because he's
sure.
he would like to take responsibility for the housewives. He believes he should be owed a little bit of compensation for that for that series.
Sure.
I don't disagree. I mean, it's there. Yes. And so it goes on from there that, like, that was the first switch that happened that then catapulted the whole world into kind of a cataclysm, and our show takes place years in the future after society has begun to crumble. Anyone who is in any way an other or different or queer is exiled from society. And our show takes place in a hidden bunker outside underground where all these like cast-offs from society have survived their exile and are just living life, dancing, singing,
and
watching the OC.
As one does.
Yeah. And what are you?
Yeah,
and every time the name Julie is said, she's the prophet, so everybody does drops on one knee. Is that it or something? Mm-hmm.
Yes. What you couldn't see in the video is there is a big poster of Julie on the side of the stage.
It's this.
And it looks like
I was
going
to say, Mark has
a t-shirt out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, a shirt with Julie Cooper's face on it.
This
I
is my
that.
Opening night gift to the whole company. Everyone got
no way.
And also, when you say that she predicts reality television, but ultimately, is it not what is real? Social media really isn't technically real. It's almost like we're in this matrix world. And I guess what you're suggesting is that because of Twitter, because of Instagram, that everyone can be a celebrity or have their 15 minutes or this extended, you know, everyone is someone. And I think we've actually kind of explored that a little bit. We were talking about that with McGee about how, you know, when we were doing the OC, it was still kind of a, you know, you're on a television show, maybe you get to do some interviews, you're in some magazines or something, but now anybody can be anything on social media.
Yes.
And
right. Yeah. And that used to be reserved for like the Oscar Wildes or the celebrities of the world. But because of social media and because of cell phones, that kind of access to that ability to like create a second persona or avatar version of yourself became democratized.
Right.
And so that therein is the connection between Oscar Wilde and Julie Cooper and the Real Housewives and Twitter. It's all part of the same.
If that wasn't obvious.
Part of the same thing. Yeah. Then you just go to the show and you also can just dance and drink and be in a nightclub and have a good time.
Because
Andrew's music's incredible.
Yes.
It really was. I mean, I wanted to be there. I wanted to be having a good time with you guys. It's really so fun. And how long did it run?
So it ran in Brooklyn. We did a production in like January of that year. And then it was running really through September.
Uh-huh.
This was 2019. So we were slated to go. The big plan was we were headed to the Edinburgh Theater Festival in August 2020. And we're still kind of, we're in like waiting mode. We think a UK production will come soon.
So
my
cool.
plan is like travel the country. I think we could come to a nightclub, travel the world, but certainly like come to a nightclub anywhere in the United States. We could plop down and do this show. And the point is that like, if you love musical theater, you come and you see a play. If you love nightlife, you come and you dance all night. And what was amazing in Brooklyn was that the people who were like nightlife people, they left and they were like, I saw a play tonight. And then the people who were theater goers were like, I went to a club. So everybody got a different experience
right.
than they were expecting.
It does. It is so reminiscent of, I'm not the first person to say this, of Rocky Horror. And the life that they took on, right? And how you go to a theater at midnight, and I kind of imagine that you guys have taken it an even higher, different step, and it's that much more immersive. And I can't wait to see it one day. I hope to see it in real life.
Yeah, absolutely.
You are both on the list any night. Anywhere. You get champagne.
I want that shirt.
Of honor. I'll send you some.
Oh my gosh, we should wear it. I want a summer shirt. You want a shirt? That'd be funny.
Find you one. I just think it's just really cool that you guys, you know, I'm sure you spent a lot of time putting this together, and just the craft and creativity that goes into something like this. I just really commend you on that, because I'm a huge musical theater nerd. I'm obsessed with musical theater.
Oh, really?
So I'd be more that person than the nightclub person, because like I like to be at home. But yeah.
Same.
Oh, yeah. Just singing. Of course. I'm just home singing.
Everyone go check out. Well, can they watch the whole thing? I know I watched the 9-minute Julie number on YouTube. Can you watch the whole thing on YouTube now?
Not yet. I mean, it's really difficult to, you know, typically when you're able to pro shoot a Broadway show that's in a proscenium, you can kind of get a similar experience as if you were sitting in a theater. But to film an immersive club show is, it's very difficult to be like, all right, this is kind of the experience. So over the pandemic, we actually put together Julie just sort of as a, you know, remember this, you know, when we used to be able to be with people in nightclubs.
Right.
So we were able to put that together. But I think in order for us to get a well-filmed full experience would take a little bit more. So we're waiting for it to be a real thing again, because I think that's the best way to experience it. So.
Absolutely.
If people go to our YouTube, which is at the Neon Coven, there's a sample of videos. They can see the Julie video. Yeah. They can see a couple numbers. And then we're always posting stuff on Instagram too. Same handle.
Mm-hmm. Yes. On TikTok.
TikTok.
It's funny. I mean, we started, you know, a lot of things were started during the pandemic, and TikTok really got started when we did the show. We were talking about Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, and now it's like Facebook's less, and now we're like, okay, we're going to have to change the script to talk about TikTok.
Right.
Right. Now I'm like, Julie predicted the metaverse.
Yes.
Absolutely. Just whatever it is, just yes and.
It keeps going.
Yes,
but we started putting clips of the show on TikTok, and it gained like a pretty fast following of, you know, Gen Zers and millennials that were just like, oh my God, this musical that has like the OC and the Housewives it reached a lot of viewers and like new people that were probably turned onto the show.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. My daughter is 22 and she's a big TikToker, and people constantly say something about your mom's on the OC. What's the OC? There's a huge generation that does not know about the show. So it's fun to see some new generations discover things. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like during the pandemic, they kind of have discovered it, you know, because people were just home watching everything available. But it's that thing where, I don't know, the OC kind of, I mean, we're rewatching it obviously for this podcast, and there definitely are cringe moments where we're like, oh, you could never do that. Like now. So there are some rewrites that could happen, just like your Facebook with TikTok, but.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, exactly. Everyone needed
but ahead of its time. I mean,
it was.
You guys know, rewatching this episode, we were like, okay,
I was like, just some bisexuality. Just let it be.
That's
true.
Which,
is rad. It's like rad and like
props.
Yeah,
you handled weird topics in like a good way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You used a clip from episode 9, which we're talking about today, in the show where Julie is predicting. What's your line? Do you remember?
I have it down here.
Why wouldn't America be fascinated with the lives and loves of Orange County's rich and fabulous?
We're all beautiful and we're all dysfunctional.
Surf, sex, and scandal.
It's a recipe for a cultural phenomenon, don't you think?
Boom.
That was
fucking incredible. I think if Julie could time travel to the year that the musical was done, she would literally curtsy, take a bow, and say, I accept being a demigod. I accept and I approve. So she would approve.
Sequel. I'll write that sequel if you're in. If you're in, Melinda, we'll write it.
I'm in.
I mean, spoiler, I have, and they know, I always say, I want this, like you were saying, Rocky Horror. I also see this. It really only works in two mediums in my mind, which is you want to experience this in a nightclub setting or as a film. And we all have a very strong image for what this looks like on film. And I want to have like skyscraper high, like relics to Julie Cooper statues. Like,
oh yeah,
I want all of that. So.
I think that's so cool. Oh, I want that anyway.
Yeah. Right?
Right?
Do you have the Newport Living magazine? That big thing.
I had one that was given to me that was probably like a 16x11. So I don't know where that prop ended up.
Wow. Could you imagine?
Whoever has it, I want it.
Yeah.
Whoever has it, I want the giant one.
If you're listening.
So, I know.
If you're out there and you're listening, send it to me.
Oscar at the Crown.
Well, thank you, Shira, Andrew, and Mark.
Yeah, it was so
lovely
nice meeting
to meet you.
Speaking with you.
So good to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Stick around to the end of the podcast to hear the song Julie from their play Oscar at the Crown.
Yay!
The X Factor.
It could be so simple, but you'd rather make it hard. Okay, sorry. I can't quote Lauryn Hill. I'll get in trouble. Alex's ex is in town, which sends Seth into a tizzy, and even more so when Ryan reveals her ex is a girl. Lindsay, Marissa, and Summer want to break from guy drama and go for a girls' night out. Seth, Ryan, and Zach aim to have a boys' night. And they even so. What do? They end up crashing girls' night at the bait shop. Julie has an unconventional idea to help the Newport group's image.
Oh.
Whew. Go through that. Okay.
It's early.
You've worked hard for what you have. Your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.
Is it?
Nah. Just giving you an out. This one was directed by Michael Fresco. I'd love to talk to Michael.
Yeah.
He did so many wonderful episodes. Written by the lovely J.J. Philbin. And the original air date, January 20th, 2005.
Hello. It's January 20th. Well,
this keeps happening. Is this going to continue to happen? So, okay, guys, let's get into the episode.
Let's do it.
Let's get into the episode. I really like this one. And this is a particularly good opening. I don't know about you, but I was salivating. I literally have Thai food on the calendar for date night. Because Kirsten orders like for enough for an army. And every single one of those sounded so good.
I'd have to agree. What's your go-to order with Thai food?
I found a place up in Ventura that does a tom yum rice.
Ooh.
And it's almost like a Thai risotto, like creamy rice with all kinds of flavors. Yeah. And
that sounds
and
really good.
Yeah. And I also love like spring. I love like Vietnamese spring rolls too. That kind of. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. She does a very hefty order, Kirsten, for everyone. Everyone interjects and they put their order in for what they want as it goes.
But with three men in the house, they can usually, I'm sure, it always gets eaten, those leftovers.
Well, they're good leftovers.
Yeah. But Sandy suggests, because they have so much food.
Oh, right. That's why.
Yeah. Yes. Inviting the girls over.
Yeah. That Ryan and Seth should invite their significant others.
Right. And so I guess Sandy has, I guess after the anniversary song, he's Team Alex now, obviously.
Yeah.
Because he says, go ahead.
Yeah.
And Lindsay's busy with therapy with mom. little.
Lindsay, who's also part of their family, which is very, very, you know, complex. So Seth goes to invite Alex to dinner. And what does Seth learn?
Well, she's very nervous. We haven't seen Alex nervous at this point.
Yeah. She's like, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of like violently hammering the staple gun and putting posters up on the wall. And Seth is there to invite her to dinner. So he learns that her ex is in town. That and he also learns that maybe it's not really her ex because they never really broke up.
Now, that is an interesting thing. So he goes down to invite her finally to meet the family because literally his dad and his, it was flat out said, can you leave my son alone? It's ruining my relationship. Mm-hmm. And now he's got the green light to bring her over for family dinner.
Right.
And I'd love to do this, but guess what? My ex, who might not be an ex. So poor Seth, the worst person on the planet to be given this news, is instantly like, what? if you were dating someone and all of a sudden they have an ex that they haven't officially broken up, I'd be upset.
Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's entitled to be like, what the F? I think. You know, it was funny in the scene I noticed when Seth is leaving, above him is the exit sign lit up, but all you see is X, EX.
I wonder if
the director did that on purpose or if it was coincidental. Whole time when it's on Seth, all you see is X above him.
I have a feeling that was on purpose. But then, of course, as he leaves, I thought Seth, he took it okay. Now, inside of his mind, he's screaming. We know he's instantly spiraling, probably.
Yep, instantly spiraling. I think Seth invented the spiral.
Yeah.
He is one big spiral, one big hamster on a wheel, like constantly.
But at the end of that scene, the ex comes out and it's revealed to be of the female persuasion.
Yes.
And
yes,
with the lovely actress Emmanuelle Shrieky.
Yes.
So, yeah, she was my stepdaughter on Entourage. But anyway, little side note, I love her. So, but you know, and it's interesting. Of course, they've done some same sex things, but I remember on television up at that point But Fox, Josh has indicated that Fox was always a little, they're always a little, you know, cautious about these storylines. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm very, it's very good that they're doing this, the diversity that we lack on the show. At least we're trying to do something at this point.
Yeah, I think, yes, it was good that they went this route.
So speaking of spiraling.
Yes.
They're at school
when
now.
They're at school, Seth is completely spiraling.
But you know what? Just to live in his brain, the way he's literally... Now, we all know that there are moments in our lives where something happens and we can make up stories, but most of us can say, you're being silly, move on. Mm-hmm. But he verbalizes what's going on in his brain. To live in his brain for even a day would be so stressful.
I feel like that's me in real life.
Yeah.
It's not fun or easy.
Well, and our brains sync up realities and then you think it's real.
Right.
And it's just not.
It's not. No, nope. Yeah. It's Seth. Basically, Seth is my brain.
Really?
So... then we have Ryan and Marissa runs into Ryan and Lindsay.
Here it's comes the awkwardness.
It's so awkward. I mean, you know, Lindsay's trying to like compliment Marissa's style. And
that's an amazing skirt.
And like her shoes. And Marissa's shoes. Like, your backpack. It's like LLB.
Where's it? And she says, where's it from?
Yeah.
And it, you know, and it's interesting that most people wouldn't, you say, I like your backpack. And she takes a step further. Where's it from? Because I think, And there's no judgment. It's just, you know, if Marissa has grown up with a mom like Julie Cooper and they live in Newport and she has Chanel and mm-hmm. I mean, Julie's always saying Chanel and you know, Valentino and Manolo, and she's pushed all those brands on her. So it seemed normal to ask her where it's from.
Right.
And, you know, we're setting up this awkwardness. There's a blooper of the season two bloopers, the little shot of Misha's feet.
Yeah.
Of the shoes. They recreated it with some man's hairy legs. So
that's awesome.
It's on YouTube.
I actually did a Funnier Die video, or whatever you want to call it, which reminds me of that. It's a body double one. I did it with Adam Scott, and it was so much fun. McGee actually is in it as well. Yeah. Maybe we talked about it when McGee was on. But it's very reminiscent of that. Anyway, so I was thinking about this and I put myself in Lindsay's shoes and I was just thinking, could you imagine if Marissa was like your boyfriend's ex? Mm-hmm. That would not be easy.
No, it's not.
No.
It's not easy. I try to get on board with the outfits, but this one wasn't a particular favorite of mine.
Of Marissa's.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I wouldn't say it was anything of note.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, it wasn't.
No, it was cute, but it wasn't
cute.
Like.
It wasn't like, yeah.
But there's the opposites of the two of them.
Yeah. So Kirsten's massaging Sandy and asking for help to improve the image of the Newport group because
right.
of the Caleb debacle.
Mm-hmm.
And he has an idea. The Newport Housing Initiative wants to put up some low-income housing. And he thinks that's a great idea. She thinks it's a great idea. And it is a great idea. But this was something that I had to look up because I don't know much about the low-income housing. So I looked it up. Newport Beach doesn't have that much.
Really?
No. They have, I guess you're allocated a certain, the state allocates a certain number every year or whatever, every time period. And then the city can appeal back. And there's some disparity that goes on. But right now, Newport Beach, from what I could gather, only has about 350 units.
Whoa.
And some other similar cities have you know, like Beverly Hills is similar to that. But sometimes it doesn't make sense to do, you know, I know. We don't have to get all into that. But yeah, Newport Beach doesn't have a lot.
Okay, so that's his idea.
Yeah.
Right. Let's go back to school in the lounge. Zach brings Summer a cupcake for their 6-month anniversary.
It's so cute though. Am I about to get whacked?
I know. Summer's, he's holding his hands over my eyes and she's like, am I about to get whacked? It made me laugh.
And even just like it's not, you know, cupcake. Like you instantly are uncomfortable. Summer's instantly uncomfortable.
Yeah. He's celebrating 6 months. Do you think 6 months is worthy of celebrating?
Well, there's a part of me that thinks like, why is she being this way? But then I actually went back and I looked at it. And I'm like, I think that's kind of the way I would be. First of all, he's asking you out to the Arches, which is a very adult, mature thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, we see Kirsten and Sandy, that's where they go for their special nights. And he wants to celebrate this thing. And I, for some reason, if you're not excited to go do something with your boyfriend who's asking you to do something like that, that's kind of a telltale sign. And I remember maybe being involved or being asked out on a date or people trying to do nice things for me at that age. And I was kind of I was like Summer. I'd be like,
No, I think that's kind of normal for a teenager. You don't really want that attention at that age. It's so fucked up. It's
kind of awkward and weird.
Yeah, it's awkward and weird. But clearly this is showing Summer is very uncomfortable.
But then it cuts to, and what did you say? She says, I'm fasting for a colonoscopy. Do you think she really said that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why do you need a colonoscopy when you're a teenager?
I don't think that's the question. It was the only thing she could think of to get out of dinner.
She said it in all seriousness.
Oh yeah, for sure she said it. That's what I love about Summer. But then they decide to have a girls' night.
After reminiscing
and about being younger and not having to deal with boys. And then they talk about what they're going to watch, which they mentioned Full House and Step by Step. Now, growing up, those were big shows for me. There was a thing on Friday nights called TGIF, and all these shows would air on Friday. Full House, Step by Step, Family Matters, like that whole grouping of shows. And I would stay home on Friday night and be so excited for TGIF.
At what age?
I don't know. 25. No. You know, maybe sixth grade, maybe young fourth grade. I don't know. Something like that.
So we are in the Newport group. And I remember there are certain times I remember reading this script and I get giddy because I get so excited about doing certain scenes. And Kelly and I were starting to have so much fun during our scenes. And this was one of them. And the dialogue is just classic, Julie. So Kirsten shares, she says, Sandy has an idea to bring to the board. Uh-huh. And Julie instantly says, she says, good news, Sandy has an idea. And Julie says, well, I have better news. I have a better idea than him. I mean, before even hearing it.
Yeah. You haven't even heard it yet. I have a better idea than him. That's pretty Julie.
Newport Living. According to this musical, it's kind of the beginning. Well, I'm thinking, it's kind of the beginning of the end of the world right now.
I think they were right.
Now, this brings up a good point. So in 2005, I think magazines were starting to go into somewhat of a decline. Do you remember how many magazines we'd read on set?
Yeah.
Like you and Nicole. I mean, you guys had like stacks of magazines.
Yes.
And we would share
them.
We
would do tear outs. Nicole Chavez, who was, you know, our costumer. That we've spoken with. We would do tear outs of like fashion inspiration. Obviously, she went on to be a stylist. Uh-huh. Yeah, all we would do is go through magazines.
And we'd have them in the trailer.
And Misha would be on the cover of them all.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a big, we would have a lot of downtime. But think about that. I mean, do you regularly get Vogue and
not at
Cosmo
all.
Anymore?
It's very rare. Yeah. I even get a magazine when I'm at the airport. Sometimes I will, like a cooking one or something.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's kind of a lost art.
So, and at the time, even it's really, really hard to be successful in a magazine.
Yeah.
So I understand the cautiousness about going into this, but there are a lot of magazines that are, you know, the Newport magazine is Riviera.
Right.
And, you know, we have LA Confidential. You have local magazines still to this day. So it is a good, I think it is a good idea. And she's so right.
Julie's actually right.
She's like, low-income housing. We're trying to appeal to people like me, and I don't care about low-income housing.
Yes, very Julie. Okay, then we're back at school, and Ryan is encouraging Lindsay to have lunch with Marissa in Summer. He's really trying to force this friendship. And this was really interesting to me because the girls of Summer and Marissa sit down, and they have In-N-Out. They drove through In-N-Out, and they're about to eat their burgers, and Lindsay sits down and pulls out her meal and she's like, you guys just eat burgers? Do you have to like exercise after that? She implies something like that. And they were like, huh, what?
Yeah.
And the fact that she's like, oh, this is a zone meal. Now, I know you said you did zone meals back then.
I did it I read the book in 1998.
Whoa.
But yeah, I thought that was, I mean, as he's pulling her over, he says, oh, you can eat with them. But first she says, I'm okay eating by myself. And he says, well, why don't you eat with them? And she goes, no, they probably don't even eat. Now here's a character defect in this girl saying that she's judgy of them and so insecure of them and somehow got into her brain that she has to eat a zone meal or anyway.
But I thought what I thought was weird because I in this circumstance with these characters, I would think that Lindsay would be the one like, no, I eat burger, I eat whatever I want. Like, I don't think about that stuff. Mm-hmm. And Marissa and Summer would be the one eating zone meals.
You're right.
You know? That's what I thought.
There was a funny moment in here, and it's just because my eye catches this. As Misha takes a bite of the burger, there's a shot of the extras behind her staring, like almost down the lens. And you can tell that somebody says, and action, and they go, oh, and they go to...
I have to go back and look at that. I didn't notice that.
It's a split second, but you can see that they're staring right at the shot, and then,
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the reason Lindsay's eating with them is because Ryan is called to an emergency comic book meeting of Seth's, who, of course, Seth is going to be very self-involved and voice all of his troubles.
On Valentine's Day 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country, and even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at intohistory.com.
And woes.
But I think it's... So now we have three nerds that have been like the classic-looking nerds.
Yeah. It's very stereotypical. Like one, that one kid with the glasses, I've seen him in... so many things.
Right. Like in Superbad, those kinds of...
Maybe. Like, no, there's something specific I'm remembering him from.
Maybe we could find out.
Maybe we could find out. But anyway, you know, it's a very... I really enjoy scenes with the comic book club fellas.
And also the fact that they're in middle school. They're junior high, he says. I don't care if you're in middle school. They're not actually high schoolers.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. And then Sandy comes into the kitchen and learns of Julie's idea with the cover of her magazine.
There's a 6-foot Julie on my table. It gives me the willies.
I just love all this Julie stuff. So, well, Seth is... Sorry, we didn't say that Seth was like, I'm going to go to the bait shop because I have to get paid. Like, I can go get my paycheck. So he has an excuse to go see Alex. That was happening at the end of that scene.
Oh, yeah. No, that's really important because he's like, I need to go tell her this after the advice from the middle schooler. And Ryan and Zach are like, don't do... It's like, they're like slow motion. Don't do it. Because Seth, he's calling her and they're just like, no. Like, they just know. I really like the fact that Seth has Zach and Ryan.
Yeah. And it's sweet. Yeah. The relationship.
Yeah.
So then Ryan's like, how about I go for you? I scope out the ex in this whole situation and I'll get whatever. So that's why after that scene with Sandy looking at your magazine cover, Ryan goes to the bait shop. And who does he meet? Alex's ex. And who is Alex's ex? Jody, a female.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
Cut to. Yeah. And of course, Seth badgering Ryan about what happened at the bait shop. Like, just verbatim.
Yeah.
Moment by moment. Explain it to me.
Oh, wait. This is funny. So one of the, you know, what we were talking about, one of the middle schooler comic book club guys, Todd Bosley. Now, I knew I recognized him. He was in a movie, which I loved as a kid, called Little Giants. Not only did I love this movie, one of my oldest friends I met when I was 11 years old, Joey Simran, is also in that movie. And he was like the first kid actor I ever knew. He's in that movie too.
There you go.
With good old Todd, who I knew... I feel like he has snot bubbles maybe in that movie. All right, Todd, hope you're doing well. All right, pool house, he's badgering Ryan. Ryan keeps avoiding the question.
Right, right.
Ryan's a terrible liar, so avoidance is his best bet.
Right, right. I wrote, reenact it. Seth is insane. He's like, it's just, and to the point where Ryan yeah, he can't keep a secret. It's really painful for him. And as Zach comes in, he's like, "Hey, man, how are you?" and of course, Zach's always cool. He's like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Right. But then they get into this whole discussion about, you know, so they could crash the girls at the bait shop, but Ryan convinces them that to do, you know, a guy's night.
Right.
The same thing as the girls are
trying
to. Yeah,
they're like, well, let's have a guy's night. Let's go out. Okay, so there that's set. That's set in place.
Caleb shows up to talk to Sandy, and he's in some ways he's like, why is everyone so scared of Julie?
I like it.
The woman is a warrior, Sanford. The woman is a warrior. I'm not facing her alone. And you know, he says she's going to embarrass herself, the family, Newport Group, everyone. So, but then I thought about it. I was like, what does Cal see in her? But definitely not business side of her.
Well, he sees another side of her.
But we've just found out she's like, oh yeah, that's romantic. Like they're like, yeah. She keeps telling Jimmy that it's not happening. Maybe it's just not happening that way, or just the way.
Well, maybe it wasn't happening while Jimmy was around, but now Jimmy's in Maui, so
yeah,
things have changed.
What?
Yeah. Okay, so this scene where Ryan is in the car with Lindsay, he's taking mm-hmm. Lindsay to Marissa's. This really got me. This mm-hmm. scene. So, you know, she brings up this dreaded conversation that I feel like every new girlfriend wants to approach, whether they do or not.
She's
like,
been thinking about it a long time.
A long time, wanting to know about the ex.
Yeah.
You know? I know I'm always asking questions. Like, I definitely am the one that wants to know everything to a fault.
But it's like, be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, no, it's not good because, so he tells the story how Ryan and Marissa met. And like my heart, man, I'm like,
it did put it this way, that scene did what it was supposed to.
1,000%.
You're instantly going missing
them. Or the music in the background. I guess mm-hmm. it's the Marissa and Ryan score.
Probably.
I didn't notice that at the time, but now I'm going to notice it. But you know, that also like makes you want to feel a certain way.
Well, and he does such a lovely job here. And he says, you know, just the first night, didn't know if Kirsten was going to accept me. And I walked down to the driveway and there she was.
And just that image of her in the pilot just pops in your head and you're like.
She was like no one I'd ever known before. Yeah. And then he's reliving.
Right.
And looks over, tell you.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. It was very obvious that like, you're like, no, Ryan and Marissa need to be together.
Right. No, it was supposed to get the reaction of the audience saying exactly what we
experienced. Like Lindsay's never going to win this thing in the audience's eyes, I think.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's kind of how it is though on shows, I feel like. So he drops her off at Marissa's. I remember this outfit vividly of Marissa's, that green, like
that. Oh, it was a top. It was like a tunic top over jeans.
Yeah, it was really pretty.
Yeah. I love that color.
And it's awkward. And Ryan's like, you know, basically telling her to look after Lindsay. And what does Marissa do like instantly when it's awkward in her bedroom?
Breaks out the flask. So it's an interesting thing. Like there are times when I guess they've never been really alone. So at first I was like, why is Marissa actually can be very, you know, she's chair at school of social chair. She can be very, very social. She doesn't seem to be an awkward person, but all of a sudden they're awkward together. And it's, have you ever had that experience where it's just plain awkward?
Absolutely.
But I didn't know if I was buying it, but you know, yeah, Lindsay's saying, oh, so this is where you live. Well, obviously this is where, and then she breaks out the flask. And
so it's super awkward.
Yeah.
They're just, you can feel the tension. You're like, please Summer, just show up already.
Right. And Lindsay looks so, I mean, she curled her hair. She looks really pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. I agree with that.
But,
and so the doorbell rings and Marissa goes to get Summer. And what does Lindsay notice? The only pictures in Marissa's room are of her and Ryan.
Do you think Marissa did that on purpose?
Well, so I'm thinking like there's no way that she wouldn't be aware of that. Or if she wasn't, the instant Lindsay walks in that room, that's the first thing like I would think of. Like, oh shit, I forgot to put those down. Or
it's like, okay, so do you think, oh, I'm going to put this down because she's coming over? Mm-hmm. Or I'm leaving it up because that's important to me.
They're both a message.
Yeah. Ballsy. And so Lindsay very smartly says, what am I doing here?
So Seth is rallying the boys for a night out. Ryan suggests, where does he suggest?
He's
being funny, right?
He's so gung-ho to go out, but and he says, you know, we can go to LA. He names every place that
Vegas,
they've been.
Vegas, Tijuana, and LA.
Which have not, never turned
happens.
Out.
No, we all know what happens in all of those.
But he's so gung-ho.
And I know.
When he says, you really want to stay in. Oh, you know what? Maybe it's because he wants the distraction of something to do because he says he wants
Seth
to play.
Is obsessing.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And he says, you want to do video games? I so want to do video
games.
Yeah,
they want to stay in and do video games.
It's so cute.
Okay, now we have the girls at the bait shop. this is cute, this scene. And then Lindsay finally like wants to drink.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a private area. I didn't ever shoot it in
I knew there
the
was because I feel like we had shot pictures or something. There with yeah. the new cast of season
two. You get the special little VIP area.
Yeah, we get the VIP shop. Lounge at the bait shop, you know.
But you guys, so you guys really aren't, I mean, vibing with Lindsay.
No.
So
because like if you just met on the street, like you wouldn't automatically be friends. You know, there's people like that where mm-hmm. like friend, like parents of kids that like your kid plays with.
Yeah.
And some you're like, okay, we can be friendly, but you wouldn't actually be friends if it wasn't for the kids.
Right.
That's
and you have nothing to talk about.
Yeah.
It's like, it's
awkward.
It's awkward. Except for the boys. Let's talk about boys.
Yeah,
but
Summer's
then it was
like, let's
oh,
talk about boys.
No,
oh,
bad subject.
Nope. Backpedal.
So let's drink.
Yep.
Straight
so they
vodka.
Drink. That's gnarly.
Oh.
but she takes it like a champ. A little too hard. Alex and Jody are arguing because Marissa leaves the lounge and goes to get ice and seltzer to mix for Lindsay.
Right. So, and Marissa and Alex don't, I mean,
know
except for introducing each other at the bait shop that one time, they really don't, they know of each other.
They don't
other.
Have a relationship.
No, they
sort.
Don't, but they're arguing. And for some reason, Jody's working at the bait shop, which is,
whatever.
I don't know.
So her and her ex are arguing and Marissa overhears and she gets Alex out of it. She does her a solid.
So the boys' night in is exactly what Ryan was trying to avoid. They are obsessing about the girls and they decide they're going to go to the bait shop after all.
Yep.
And he tries to stop them.
Yep.
And then finally, Seth is like,
you know something.
You know something. I'm a man in a desert and you have Kool-Aid and you're not willing to share.
Yeah.
What is it?
And he tells her.
Have you seen the ex? I've seen the ex. What's he like? Who is he? He's a she.
Right.
End of scene.
And good. Yep. And that's what happens. And Seth cannot believe it. Okay. So we're back at the bait shop. The thrills are in this episode.
I know. I remember, at this point, because now I was like, ooh, I've got to catch up because I didn't know a lot of the bands. At this point, I was like, paying attention to music and I'd be excited to hear the
bands
coming in.
Yeah. Saturday night is playing.
Yeah.
Lindsay's chugging. She's drunk.
She's really drunk. She does a good one. Shannon did
did
a great job.
She did a great job. And she's telling Marissa that, Marissa, you know what? You're not scary.
She's like, thanks, I think.
I know.
But Marissa obviously is not, she's got a high tolerance, clearly.
Yeah. And Summer's not drinking because she's driving. So she goes to grab a coffee and she runs into creepy Matt Miller. So funny little story is Matt Miller, the actual Matt Miller, is one of Josh Schwartz's best friends.
Uh-huh.
Matt Miller has a sandwich named after him at Canner's Deli. So Canner's Deli is a famous deli
on
Fairfax in Los Angeles. Been there forever. We would all go to Canner's all the time while we were shooting the show. Josh, Adam, all of us, we would go.
Not me.
Not Mindy. Well, you had a little kid and a family. But we were out and we were at Canner's and we would always order the Matt Miller. Egg bread or challah. Munster cheese, turkey, coleslaw. You grill it. The way Josh describes this is amazing. But anyway, it made it on the menu. It's like the biggest thing that's ever happened to Matt Miller, even though he's very successful writer, showrunner.
Is he?
It's his sandwich on the Canner's Deli.
Yeah,
for sure. Matt Miller.
So what does it take to get a sandwich named after you on the menu?
I think
menu
he had
Cantor's.
To pitch it. To Canner.
Or he'd order
whoever.
Well, he'd order it enough times.
Yes, he ordered it. And now, but it's not called the Matt Miller. It's called the Matt Special.
Okay. Good to know.
Yep.
Hey,
I
you
can't
learned
wait to
it
tell
here.
Josh that we talked about the Matt Miller at length.
The Matt Special at Cantor's Deli, everyone.
It's really good. Oh, I want it right now.
Okay.
I might have to get it.
It sounds good.
Yeah, I like to put potato chips in it.
Mm.
Yum. Okay. Anyway, so she's talking to Matt Miller. And
who's instantly like got that creepy vibe.
Oh, he's so creepy.
Yeah, with the puka shell necklace and he's wearing corduroys.
And he's talking to her like about the 6-month anniversary, freaking her out more that Zach has talked about this with everyone.
This is a great scene in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And Seth is just spiraling and he says that I should think this is really cool, mm-hmm. but it makes me think that she's even way more out of my league.
Mm-hmm.
And Zach's like, she's hot, right? Of course, he does the classic boy thing.
Yeah.
But I couldn't help. There were moments where he was going. And Adam in the scenes with the nerds and then when he has to apologize to the nerd.
Right.
And in this scene, he constantly talks about doing his version of Vince Vaughn.
Right.
I see it in this episode more than any for some reason.
Yeah.
I mean, it keeps coming up, but I can see that, like, you know, it's like, explaining away being, you know, the way he apologized to the nerd or right here. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
I hate traffic, which sounds like me.
Yeah.
So here we are at El Forno restaurant, which is not a real restaurant. Did you know that it was the front of the studio that they slapped the name, the outside of the restaurant is they slapped a sign on the front of the studio in Manhattan Beach, put some flowers up and made it look like our
restaurant. We did that a few times, dressing up the stages.
You're right, right. And here Julia is pitching this magazine and instantly Sandy is telling Julie, come on, it's a lousy idea. And she's like, oh, this is coming from someone who works for free.
Yeah.
Which is like pro bono work kind of thing.
Yep.
But nobody is backing her up.
Mm-mm.
And then Kirsten kind of says, oh, Sandy, I did the research. It's actually a really good idea. And he's like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And then this is a line of dialogue that I, to this day, I've said it at least half a dozen times in this podcast, but I use it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, like, I refuse to be part of this game of hungry, hungry hippos. Because that's what I describe, you know, Hollywood or any kind of, like, when egos get involved and people are just being, you know, they're not acting in love.
Mm-hmm.
But she says, why wouldn't America be fascinated with the lives and loves of Orange County's rich and famous? Fabulous. We're all beautiful and we're all dysfunctional. Surf, sex, and scandal. It's a recipe for a cultural phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Which Josh basically predicted this. And this is the scene that's used in the musical. So.
Right.
Yeah. It's
Julie the Prophet.
Julie the Prophet, right? This is a little kind of a personal tidbit because I was thinking about this on this. When you try to bring up memories from this show, I remember, first of all, this outfit, this kind of purple, almost like an old, what do you call that? Is it more like a Gucci pattern type?
No, Poochie.
Poochie.
Mm-hmm.
Duh. Poochie. But I remember that Cindy and I did a very elaborate, like, purple eye.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of the fact that makeup is really designed for lights.
Right.
And on set because it really worked. I remember in daylight, it looked really purple and really bright and everything. I'd had a conflict or a disagreement with my husband at the time, my ex, but it's whatever, I don't even remember what it was. I just know that we argued on the phone right before the scene. And I was crying and this purple makeup was like,
woo. Oh, no.
And Peter was like, are you okay? And I'm like, me, whatever. But, you know, things do go on outside of our world. And I had this makeup and Cindy was like, fuck.
Yeah.
You got this purple makeup. We got to fix it. But that's my memory from that scene that I was like, okay, here we have to go.
That's so hard whenever you're going through anything
in
life. And then it's like, okay, action. Just all has to shut off.
It happens.
Our poor, amazing, incredibly talented hair and makeup people.
Yeah, right.
Are always there for us. Cindy and Joni in particular.
So, the boys head
into the bait shop. The Thrills again are playing Not For All the Love in the World.
I love that song.
Yeah. Seth confronts Alex and fails.
Yeah, she's like, no, this has got to wait. Okay, I will wait. Like, he's coming in pretty hot and heavy and aggressive, right?
Yes. Summer talks to Matt about how she gets claustrophobic in relationships and suggests she doesn't want a boyfriend. Zach shows up and is angry that she's standing with Matt. I get that. It's like girls' night and you walk in, she's standing with a dude. Not the best feeling.
Yeah, but she's just standing there.
I know.
Right?
But he gets over it quickly. It's not like a big thing.
But yeah.
I get it. And Ryan finds Lindsay, who is sh-wasted.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
He shoots Marissa at, like, a death look.
Yeah. And
I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, she's like wasted, but like annoying wasted.
You know, it's funny though, when going out in high school always meant like California coolers and beer, and yeah, it always meant
Boone's
some
Strawberry
like,
Hill was like,
what is Strawberry Hill?
It was like a strawberry wine cooler.
Yeah. We had California coolers.
Fuzzy Navel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben and Bartles and James.
But you know, yeah, she is wasted, dude.
Yeah. So he wants to take her outside.
He
for
wants
a
to
nice
take her
walk.
Outside. So he does. He takes her out to the beach. I mean, she is embarrassingly drunk.
Yeah.
It's not cute. It's like,
but it's almost, and probably, I think for Ryan, he's probably like, God, really, Marissa? And, you know, of course, there's a lot of resentments there and anger about it. But
right. And then he walks her out there. She's wasted. And he says, I need to get you like a burger and fries, right? To help sober her up.
Well, they trip and fall and it looks painful. Are you okay? And how much did you drink? As much as Marissa?
He's like, that's a lot.
That's a lot. Oh, shit. And I'm going to need to get you something greasy and some coffee. And And she's been talking about going swimming. So I think everyone agrees here that why, Ryan, would you leave her next to water and
yeah,
under
the pier?
He just
leaves her on the sand to go. Obviously, this is a big, big hole in this script.
Wouldn't it be interesting to see, and I doubt we could ever get this, but the different levels of versions of the scripts as they go.
Mm-hmm.
I just had this theory that maybe they had a different version, that maybe she goes to get some coffee and greasy and she wanders off and he assumes she goes, they wanted to get him into the water. That's what they wanted
him
to do.
It had to be dramatic. It had to be, yeah, no, obviously that had to happen. But let's just say we don't know that you have to do what's written and why they write it. Just looking at it as an audience member.
Right.
You're like, come on, dude. Yeah. You don't leave a drunk girl on the beach.
No, no. Yeah. And then, but in the right before that scene happens is when Seth confronts Alex. And even if he has a point of, you know, you haven't treated me nicely, even if he has, and you lied to me, he does it absolutely rudely and mean.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about banger sisters, and he's very kind of harsh.
He's bitter.
He's really, he doesn't do it in a cool way.
No. He's very bitter.
Yeah. He's like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't know. He played it for real. And you know how Seth is so manipulative? Like he's always trying to do something to get, you know, a result. But in this instance, I actually felt like he was like, I'm done. I'm so pissed off and I'm angry and I'm hurt. In the back of his mind, Seth is always thinking, maybe I'll walk away and she'll come after me, or I'll be more attractive to her doing this or something.
Right.
But in the moment, I think he...
No, I think he's really...
He really is upset.
Yeah. Yeah. So we talked about this. Ryan goes back to the beach and Lindsay obviously isn't there anymore. Her clothing is, for whatever reason. And
which
so he goes into the ocean looking for her. Fucking filming this?
I heard about this afterwards.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Well, and so... Guys, whenever you see a night scene,
mm-hmm.
we shoot from, you know, we have a call time at like 5 p.m., 4 or 5, and then we shoot until sunrise. So these few seconds of Ben in the ocean probably took hours. And we were shooting probably, I did the math, we were probably shooting in December, and he's in the ocean in December.
Pacific Ocean, which is cold even in the summer.
Yeah, and there's, and I was like, okay, how many different shots did they have and the different camera setups? So it was hours of him having to do
brutal.
That.
Brutal.
Yeah, and it's long and you're working crazy hours, and I heard that it was very brutal, and people aren't always like, they don't have smiles on their faces when they're doing that.
It doesn't sound fun.
This isn't...
That's the thing I hate most about what we do is being cold.
Yeah. Nighttime, nighttime shooting in Canada at 3 in the morning and a helicopter blowing water on your face. That happened to me.
Yeah. Sounds great.
No.
So he's in the water. It's miserable.
Yeah.
In real life and on the screen. He's looking for her. He thinks she's out in the ocean somewhere.
Right. And of course, Seth is now kind of, woe is me, on the dock. And he hears Ryan screaming, Lindsay.
Yeah.
And then something that happened off screen that we didn't see is she's fine. She's
in
the office.
Yeah. Seth's like, what are you doing? Lindsay's fine. She's in Alex's office.
So then now think about that. She may have been dead. She may have been drowning. She's drunk. I'm pissed off. Now I'm cold. Now I feel like an idiot. I overreacted and I'm walking into this office and there's Marissa is putting a blanket on her.
Yeah.
So he's coming in hot.
He's coming in. Well, he should be coming in cold because he's in water, but he's coming in hot. Yeah. And
oh, he's too angry to be cold. I guarantee you, yeah. His blood pressure is
he was so pissed. Like him yelling at Marissa, I was like, Jesus.
This was a powerful scene.
Yeah.
Very powerful. And you know, it's interesting when, you know, when they say the body keeps the score, the trauma that your body holds on to and the things that it triggers. And instantly wanting to assign blame of something that could have been a preventable thing and putting it all on Marissa. And whether, you know, and him instantly saying, you want to ruin your life? Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Because you tried to do this. You tried to drag me down. Now you're doing it to her.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some truth in that and how painful it is for Marissa to hear.
I know.
That's where what he feels.
But you know what I liked is how Alex like automatically jumped in and defended her.
Like, yeah, you know.
Like, yo, buddy.
Yeah.
I liked that. I was like, damn, yeah.
Even Seth's face was like, ooh,
yeah.
This isn't you anymore.
He was too angry. But you know, it brings up his own issues with alcoholism with his mother, mm-hmm. you know, and everything he went through with Marissa. So he's got mm-hmm. a lot there.
Yeah. And it was so real. There was a part of me that's like, I mean, the bait shop was on set, so it wasn't actually the same night that they were in the water.
Right.
But I was like, it's like, wow, that's so real. I wonder if there's sometimes we bring real stuff into our scenes.
Of course.
Yeah. I was like, is there, you know, something going on between Ben and Misha in that scene?
Right.
Couldn't help it.
Every
think
time
that,
I hit Seth in the show, I really just wanted to hit Adam. No.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of power behind his angst. So yeah, so then he leaves her there. He keeps leaving Lindsay just in these very odd places and situations. What was so weird though is they're like getting her, she's sleeping it off, but then they're like, all right, let's get her out of here. Once they leave, Alex and Marissa are like, okay, let's take her.
Well, it was everybody in that room said, he was so angry that they were like, we'll take care of her.
Right.
You don't need to. And even says, just let's go, man. Like it didn't seem, you know, for him to acquiesce and say,
he
okay.
He was definitely, yeah, I get it. I get that.
Yeah. Yeah. But then in the meantime, you know, Zach has left and Summer left. And of course I'm doing this like, but they came in the same car, but no, that you were actually shooting in the real diner, which is on the pier. So it's right down the diner.
Were we shooting in the real diner?
Yeah, I looked it up because we did have the diner at some point.
We did build it at one point.
But
yeah.
That one had the, I could be wrong, but I think it was the real one because the water was actually in the background. So you just walked over to the diner and you sat down in the tiniest little booth.
Yeah, I like that booth. I would sit in that little booth.
Which made me think it was on set, but then I went, well, maybe the diner has like a little single booth for a little tiny. It was summer-sized.
It was summer-sized. Yeah. But then, so she orders a milkshake, but who does she see? Zach already at a table with a milkshake. So they make up.
It's a great scene. It's, you know, it's like, this is where Summer is so aware of herself and why she does things. And she's talking about like, my only history in a relationship is Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And she equates it, the analogy is to a pack of wolves and wolves that piss everywhere and being in a relationship with Seth.
Mm-hmm. Accurate.
Yeah. I like that analogy. So yeah. This whole 6 month thing, she needs baby steps.
She needs baby steps. And he's like, I'll forget the 1 year.
When she says, if Zach's not right for me, nobody is.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason ultimately it doesn't feel she's having issues because she obviously still feels for Seth.
Yes.
But she's fighting it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't. But also it's not only just Seth, because it's not only just Seth, it's what Seth made you behave like. And you're kind of undoing that kind of behavior mm-hmm. and those feelings. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, she's just sticking to her guns too.
Yeah. Back at the pool house, Seth, of course, is obsessing once again about like, I really kind of screwed that up, didn't I? And Ryan's like, oh yeah, probably. Oh, and then Ryan says, you know, I probably was a little hard on Marissa, you think?
Yeah.
Right?
And Seth tells him he like pushed Lindsay too hard to be friends with Marissa. It's time to apologize, boys.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like, Ryan, sometimes it's just like, you don't even know. And accepting when your friends that you trust tell you something, it's good to listen. Yeah. And or at least, at the very least, it's smart to say, let me take a look at that and see if your observation is real. Mm-hmm. That's a smart thing to do.
Yep. Agreed. All right. Ryan and Seth show up at Alex's. Ryan apologizes to Marissa.
This is a lovely scene.
It really is.
They both made some really great choices.
It was hard to watch, honestly, because yeah. I just want them together. Marissa admits that it's hard for her to get over their relationship. It's really sad, man.
Yeah. And you know, it really is true. They kind of, when he came, they kind of got back together and then he found out about DJ and broke it off with her. And so then she decided to stay with DJ and then, mm-hmm. but I have a feeling that I think she would have stayed with him. It always has been him. It always will be him.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, then of course, Seth and Alex are outside and, you know, Seth is now calmed down and this is how you solve problems. Mm-hmm. You speak without emotion, kind of matter of fact.
Yep.
Communicate, wait until you're not angry and say, you know, so you guys getting back together? Mm-hmm. Are you not? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And then they just apologize to each other.
Yeah.
That's it.
I forget what happens with them, but I guess I'll find out as I watch.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we're going out on this episode, Marissa is at Alex's watching a movie. Alex joins her, asks her if she's cold. They share a blanket. Not only do they share a blanket, they share a look.
A look.
A stare. They share a stare. Now, I mean, if anyone's watching this, you're like, okay, this is something.
You're right.
Right?
Right.
Have you ever been hit on by a woman, Melinda?
Probably. I don't know. Nothing's popped into my head. You?
Not outwardly like that. I don't think. Well, I don't remember if I had.
Yeah, it's probably, I don't know.
Like nothing like tension like that. Like, oh.
Nothing like that. There's probably some like club in West Hollywood or something. Definitely.
Where some shit could have gone down.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. So
in the 90s.
Clearly. Yeah. In the 90s. Clearly the beginning of Alex and Marissa. Not to do any spoilers, but spoiled.
Well, from this episode, you'll find out that Julie is the prophet, but I think that's Josh Schwartz or J.J. Philbin.
Let's not give Josh Schwartz the status of prophet. He'll go to his head. All right, that is episode 9, The X Factor.
The X Factor. Now we have some voicemails.
All right.
Hi, Melinda and Rachel. Thank you so much for doing the podcast and listening to all our questions. You guys are great and doing just an amazing job. I've been a fan of the OC for so many years. It's one of my favorite shows. I just wanted to ask, was there any time where you had conflict, either one of you, like in your personal lives, and then had to go on screen and kind of pretend like nothing happened and continue on with the show? That's my question. Okay, take care. Bye.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So you literally just told the story.
Yeah, I told that. I mean, that was, it happened
you,
in this episode.
Way.
Thank
I'm
you.
So happy you're listening.
Do you have a specific story like that?
You know
that?
What? Actually, it just popped in my head. I mean, it was like a close family friend had passed away and I learned literally right before I was supposed to film this scene. It was a show I did called Take Two. We were up in Vancouver and it was our first day of shooting. And I found this out and immediately I had to go. And it had comedy to it, so it was funny as well. It wasn't a serious scene, and I had to snap right into it. And that's never easy, because I was like crying, and then, okay, makeup like wipes up my tears, and then you action.
I remember it was the Sunday before the end of the series.
Mm-hmm.
We had 1 week to shoot, and it was a Sunday. And I had to be in Palos Verdes the next morning at 5 a.m., and my dad had a stroke.
Ugh.
And... but because, anyway, this things like this have happened. It was like, do I need to be there? And otherwise, I need to be at work.
Right.
And this is an industry that we don't get to...
You don't get to call in sick, so to speak.
No, I mean, it's you know.
I remember one time Kelly like had thrown up that morning. And so the whole schedule had to be rearranged because she wasn't going to come in. And I'm like, I didn't know you could do that.
That insurance, those, they have to take insurance days.
If someone's really sick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there's things, I was shooting a show in Texas and when my sister passed in 94. And I was like, and I was 25 years old. And the producers are like, we'll get you out of here as soon as you can. And I tried to work and I couldn't work. And they were like, please, like they were asking me.
You're like, I have no control.
And I was
over.
Like, So I had to go back and finish. But yeah, these things happen. But you know, you still go to, if you can, you go to work. Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. And also being a mom, I remember getting the call that CG had pneumonia and I had to shoot on the OC. And it was just like, it's so nerve wracking.
Right. Yeah. So I got to get out of here.
Yeah. And there's not a lot of like, oh, you get to go see your kids' games all the time. But every once, Michael Lang made sure that I could leave early to go see a performance of CG's once, which I found so grateful. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a special one.
There's a lot of them. Yes. There's a lot of conflict.
Hi, Melinda and Rachel. I'm such a big fan of the OC and of both of yours. My question is, what was it like in the beginning stages of filming the show, getting to know each other, and especially the relationship between both of y'all during the show?
Well, thank you.
Well, I think Rachel and I, we felt similar because we were both guest stars. And I've said this before in the podcast when they were doing that photo shoot that they would, you know, they kind of like, well, let's get the main cast and, well, let's get those other two girls in here. And we definitely, you tend to feel a little bit different than the main cast in the beginning.
Yeah, we were like on the same trajectory, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were all friends. And that first year, especially, we all got really close and hung out a lot outside of work and created a family. And that's why when we see each other now, you know, like last week with Peter or anytime any of us get together, it's nothing but love. So that feels good.
Yeah, we would do certain things together. Like we'd ride together to events and things like that from time to time.
For sure.
But I was a mom, so I couldn't hang out with the youngins all the time.
She wasn't clubbing in the club.
Oh, every once in a while I'd go out to a club with you guys.
Marissa. Mindy was always a good time. Kind of like Marissa.
Yeah.
Hey, ladies. My name is Gabe. Big fan of the show and big fan of the podcast. I was just wondering if you could see a spin-off series following any one character from the OC or a group of characters, what would you like to see? I personally would love to see a spinoff of just the Noopsies doing what they do in Orange County. Thank you so much and have a good day.
Yeah. Thank you, Gabe.
It's called The Housewives.
Yeah, that's
it's
Noopsies.
Already been done.
I mean, obviously, I'd like to follow Che. Chris Pratt's character in season 4.
Yeah.
That'd be a fun spinoff.
Yeah. That'd be a funny spinoff.
That would be funny.
Actually, I want to know what Luke's up to.
Oh, yeah, Luke.
Yeah. Yeah.
We should catch up with Luke. No, but Julie would obviously be the most entertaining.
Probably.
For sure.
There we go. Thank you for your voicemails, guys.
Thank you so much. Thank everyone for listening. Follow, rate, and review. Welcome to the OC Bitches, wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you like to watch us, check it out on YouTube or on HBO Max. And we'll leave you with the song Julie from their play Oscar at the Crown.
How did you know, Julie? How did you know? How did you know? How did you know? Bye, bitches.
when Shopify says you can sell anywhere, oh, they mean it. Woo, hold up. Just got a new sale. Whoa, Shopify doesn't mind if you're at sea level. Or on top of the world.
Whether you're selling carabiners or crop tops, start selling with Shopify today and join the platform simplifying commerce for millions of businesses worldwide. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/podcast22. Shopify.com/podcast22.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I'm a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh.
And I'm Rabia.
But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you'll like it too.
What? True crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of, obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Kalief Browder.
Elisa Lamb, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No. We're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.